Barrier Reef is vast, beautiful, and fragile. And as you may know, it's under threat. Despite science-based recommendations, the Australian government has recently lobbied the World Heritage Committee to not list the Great Barrier Reef as in danger. So what does this actually mean practically for the reef? Joining me now is somebody who's spent 28 years working on the reef, so it's pretty safe to say he knows his stuff. John Day is an adjunct senior research fellow at the ARC Centre of Excellence for Coral Reef Studies at James Cook University. And he's here to tell us about what an in danger listing would mean and why our government fought against it. John, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Toby.
So let's start with the current state of the reef. What are some of the things that led to this recommendation that the World Heritage Committee give the reef a in danger listing?
Well, I think probably the main one was the government's own report. By law, the Australian government is now required to report on the reef every 5 years. It's a thing called the Outlook Report. And in 2014, the Outlook Report said the Great Barrier Reef was in poor condition. And in 2019, the Australian government's own report downgraded to very poor. And that was followed the following year by another group called IUCN, the International Union for Conservation of Nature. And their report in 2020 came out, and they listed the Great Barrier Reef as critical, which is the worst rating on a four-point scale. And that report is compiled by international experts. So both these reports were brought to the attention of UNESCO and the World Heritage Committee, and that was the draft decision that went to the committee last Friday, I think it was. And they, as you are aware, they knocked back the draft decision and decided not, in this case, to list it as in danger.
What would it mean, though, if the reef was listed as being in danger?
Well, in danger is not it's not a punishment or a sanction. It's a process that's used by the World Heritage Convention and what they call the operational guidelines, the guidelines that help people understand how to implement the convention. And in danger is basically a cry to the international community saying this property is under threat and we need to do something to address those threats. So, as I said, it's not regarded as a punishment. It's basically a call to the international community to rally behind and try and ensure that the values for which that property was inscribed are, going to recover. And can I stress that in danger is, it's not a rare thing. There are currently 53 properties out of over 1,000 World Heritage properties that are on the in danger list. And those 53 properties are not just the developing countries. Many people think it's just places like Africa and those places. So, for example, the Everglades National Park in the USA is on the in danger list. And the other important point is to point out that once you're on the in danger list, that's not forever. So the Galapagos Islands and Belize, which is also a barrier reef, were both on the in danger list in previous years and both showed that they could address the concerns raised by the committee and therefore are no longer on the in danger list.
Now, the government lobbying for the Great Barrier Reef not to be listed as being in danger. Let's talk about that for a minute. How does the system work that a government can take a scientific report that says, well, this is in danger, and they can be like, yeah, but is it in danger though? Is it really in danger? Should we allow these decisions such as that by the World Heritage Committee to be guided by politics when the science is clearly saying, well, it is in danger?
Well, I think, Toby, there's a couple of points. One, climate change has been around for a while, but in terms of the World Heritage Committee, in the past, they basically said, look, climate change is the ambit of another whole convention. There's a convention on climate change. And the World Heritage Committee said, look, we look after heritage and the IPCC and the UNFCCC, which is another convention, they look after climate change. Today, however, the committee recognises that so much of the world's heritage is being impacted by climate, so they have to take concern. So that's one change that's happened recently. The World Heritage Committee brought to the last meeting a climate policy, a draft policy, which has now been signed off by the World Heritage Committee, and it gets finalised at a meeting called the General Assembly later in the year. But that's something else that the Australian government used to argue. They said until the policy's actually been ratified, we shouldn't apply it. But all this is just postponing the inevitable. As you said, Toby, the science is quite clear. The values for which the Great Barrier Reef was listed are suffering. UNESCO had all the information it needed. It doesn't need to postpone it. So it can make the decision. But I also want to stress the point that an in danger listing is not going to fix the problem. In danger is just really going to raise the awareness internationally and certainly in Australia, but it then needs action to address the problem that are affecting. And it's not just climate change. That's the other important point. And the UNESCO draft decision talked about this. There are a number of threats facing the reef, and climate change is the number one threat, but also water quality coming off the land. And there are other issues like the fact that the government is still dumping what they call maintenance dredge spoil in the Great Barrier Reef. A while ago, this was raised as a concern, and the government brought in the law to say, oh, yes, we're going to stop dumping capital dredge spoil in the reef. But they were very quiet and forgot to tell the Australian public that, oh, yes, we'll continue to dump maintenance dredge spoil. And that's actually as bad, if not worse, because it's very fine material that can then spread on and cause problems on corals and seagrass. So I want to get across the point that there's many threats facing the Great Barrier Reef. Climate change is the number one, and that's unfortunately the one that the government's not acting upon. The government is doing a fair bit to try and address water quality. They're spending literally millions of dollars of taxpayers' money, but unfortunately their own targets are not being met. So whilst they are getting some wins, and that's great, not as many as they had promised or had hoped.
I mean, in terms of you saying that an in danger rating increases the awareness of the reef, you know, it does feel as though awareness is pretty high that the reef's in trouble already. Like I can't think of, over the last 5 years, it feels as though there's consistent reporting talking in incredibly depressing terms, and incredibly depressing as somebody who isn't a senior research fellow for coral reef studies at James Cook. You know, as a layperson, it's a lot to take in how the degradation of the reef due to a number of different factors. At a certain point, don't you think awareness hits a it hits a point where is aware is wherever going to be, you know, and sure. Action is actually what is going to be required to maintain the quality of the reef.
I couldn't agree more, Toby. And that action, though, is more than just, you know, action by the Australian government. We need action internationally, nationally, and locally. And, you know, I think with what's been happening in recent years, and just look at the last couple of months, the sort of extreme weather we've had with the floods in China and the floods in Germany, the wildfires in Northern Europe, the extreme temperatures, everyone is now starting to recognise that climate change is happening. It's real. But that's unfortunately where internationally the governments haven't taken on the hard decisions. Some have, and unfortunately the Australian government is not following the general trend in trying to do things about, for example, restricting their emissions and addressing the requirements of what we call the Paris Agreement. So, yes, you're right. It's been talked about for a long time. If I can just talk about another report, one of my colleagues at James Cook Uni looked at all the coral reefs that are on the World Heritage List. There are 29 separate World Heritage Property listed reefs. And under the current projection with climate change, all 29 will cease to exist as functioning coral reef ecosystems by the end of the century, unless we do something about restricting our emissions. Mm-hmm. So the reduction in emissions, you know, greenhouse gases, that's absolutely critical. And it's not, again, just, I want to stress, not just the natural sides of the world are being impacted. The cultural heritage of the world is also being impacted by climate change. One of the sites that was discussed at the recent meeting was the city of Venice. And they've got major issues with sea level rise and issues like that. So many, many properties on the World Heritage List are being impacted by climate change. And that was another excuse that our government used until, you know, all the sites that are impacted are listed in danger. Why should we be the leaders? Well, my answer to that is a number of things. The Great Barrier Reef is probably the most iconic marine protected area in the world. It's probably the most biodiverse World Heritage Area on the planet. And Australia is a rich country. We have the ability to do something. So we need to show some leadership and then get other countries to come with us and start addressing climate change. But instead, we're trying to plaster blame off onto other people. So the Australian government is not showing the leadership that we need to start addressing climate change. But I want to stress, it's not just them. We have to get the whole world addressing it.
No, absolutely. Look, in terms of the World Heritage aspect of this, we often do think of the Barrier Reef through those, the biodiversity aspects. What leads to a place, a marine park, being considered as as heritage. You know, heritage is the sort of world where instinctively I'm thinking of Venice. I'm thinking of, you know, a certain form of architecture, of these older sites where people have made structures and stuff. How does the Great Barrier Reef factor in as heritage in that sense?
Toby, the way the World Heritage Convention is written, it talks about both natural and cultural heritage. Mm. And there are many sites, places like Kakadu, they're listed for both values. So if you think about Kakadu, it has incredible natural values, but also amazing indigenous values. So many properties are listed for both natural and cultural. But the World Heritage Convention clearly talks about sites that are of outstanding value to humanity, and these are ones that are best of the best. So things like the Great Barrier Reef, when it was first assessed and placed on the list in the 1980s, the assessing committee, this IUCN, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, they said if any coral reef in the world should be listed as World Heritage, the Great Barrier Reef is the one. So it is iconic. It is, you know, absolutely, it's the biggest coral reef ecosystem on the planet.
Mm.
But when you think about it, you know, it's got amazing corals, but it's more than that. It's got amazing fish, amazing, you know, dugong, whales, a huge number of species, you know, huge areas of seagrass, mangroves. These are all important, and these are the values for which it was listed as World Heritage. So the word heritage might be a bit confusing, but the word add natural in front of it, and that's what the Great Barrier Reef has been listed for.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I just think of being fortunate enough as a young child going up there and seeing it all. And, you know, the question remains is how much it probably doesn't look the same as when I would have been, what, 10 or something, right?
Like Definitely not. I mean, that's the sad reality.
Mm.
People going today, they can see areas that are quite spectacular. And aesthetics, you know, when you fly over the amazing reef with the, you know, blue water and the white sand and the mangroves or the rainforest behind it, it does look spectacular. So that's one of the values for which it was listed, the aesthetics.
Mm.
And that will probably be maintained. But you stick your head underwater and many of the people who were diving on the reef decades ago say it's nothing like it was in the past.
Mm.
And there's a term, a science term called shifting baseline, which basically means if you look at it today and you only have today's or, you know, yesterday to measure it against, you think it's okay. But when you go back generations, that's the shifting baseline.
Oh.
And people who have been monitoring it for years can show these values are on a downward trend. And so I want to sort of point out, it's not that we've lost the whole reef and it's not the end of the world. We can, it can recover, but we need to do a lot more. And the point is, you know, unless we do that, it's just going to continue this downward trend. And so when we have tourist operators saying, oh, I can take people out and show wonderful areas, yes, they can. Those wonderful areas, however, may not be there in the future if we don't start addressing these issues of water quality and climate change.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today, John. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Toby.
That was John Day, Adjunct Senior Research Fellow at the ARC Centre of Excellence for Coral Reef Studies at James Cook University, talking about everything that's going on with the Great Barrier Reef and whether it should be listed as endangered by the World Heritage Convention, under the World Heritage Convention. You're here on